Nick, 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 Nick,
Nickelodeon!
From Nickelodeon Studios in Burbank, California, this is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Hey guys, I'm your host, Hector Navarro. Welcome to the podcast. My guests today are the creators of one of the greatest kid shows of all time, a show that was nominated for over half a dozen Emmys, featured incredibly popular musical artists like Mos Def, Jimmy Eat World, actors like Jack Black, Elijah Wood, brought us Muno, Fufa, Broby, Tootie, Plex, and DJ Lance Rock, and showed off the brilliance that is the Aquabats. I'm talking, of course, about Yo Gabba Gabba. And my guests today are MC Bat Commander and the Sea Ghost themselves, Christian Jacobs and Scott Schultz. This is gonna go awesome. I can't wait.
Really?
Because you guys are big geeks and you are obviously geeking out about stuff right in front of me. I love that.
What kind of geeks?
Oh yeah.
What big kind geeks. Of stuff are you into right now? What are you collecting? What are you obsessed with?
It's one of those things of like, I have to go through phases because I want so much that I have to say, okay, now I'm not collecting records anymore. I just cannot do that.
Yeah.
So we got to start with what I'm not collecting. Collecting records, not collecting vintage things for the house. Can't do that anymore. Can't do that.
I've really turned down my Japanese toy collecting. Like it's way down.
Oh no.
Because I'm at the level where it's like, everything I still want is way too expensive.
Yeah, how do you turn that down though? That's
I haven't bought like a new Japanese toy in a long time. But
what?
I was really into collecting Japanese toys for a long time. But then I got really into movie posters. I've been in collecting movie posters a lot.
Yeah, then you got to frame them.
Most of them are in a big stack against a wall. Like just I can't hang them up. There's no room.
Yeah, that's the same with me. I have a collection that's just like grown in my storage.
And there's nowhere to hang
There's no walls because every wall has like something on it, you know?
You guys probably have such cool houses full of cool stuff.
No, you know.
You'd think.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Let's leave that to the imagination.
Let's just think our houses are amazing.
Let's just say that there's probably man cave offices.
That's right. That's right. Both of us, because both of our wives are like, get that stuff out.
Can obviously see the influence of stuff like Sesame Street, Pee-wee's Playhouse, H.R. Puffin stuff, Banana Splits. What kind of stuff were you into as a kid? Did the appreciation for that, was that built in at the kid level or did that kind of stuff come later?
The stuff when we were kids, no one can get away from that, right? Like we're all influenced by stuff when we're kids. But as the same kind of nerdy adults who collect weird VHSs, I mean, we were collecting weird dubs, VHS dubs of crazy 60s like kids shows when we didn't even have kids.
Yeah. We've known each other since high school.
Yeah.
Long story short, my mom remarried Scott's uncle. So we were instant cousins and we were 16 or 17. Like we became like family. Mm-hmm. And Scott and I hit it off right away because we had a lot of the same interests. And so even in high school, we were in the same kind of music. We were going to shows together and we would go to Tower Records and rent weird movies together. Like, you know, like all the classic cult movies, we, you know, Eraserhead, all the David Lynch stuff, like
anything in the midnight movie section.
Yeah, midnight movies, like, you know, John Waters and, you know, even, maybe I shouldn't go there.
You know, we shouldn't go specific, but let's just say we watched a lot of weird movies together at like 3 a.m. You know what I mean? Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and
with our Game Boy Color, just like.
And so I think from growing up kind of in the golden age of television, like at the dawn of children's TV and then going through like punk rock and hip hop and all the crazy, cultural explosions that we were able to experience. And then when we started having kids, we were going through a resurgence of like, this is awesome and this is cool and check this out. There's this place online that sells these bootleg tapes of this show from Germany or, you know, discovering stuff from, you know, internationally. That also weighed into it. And then it all just came together as we started having families of our own. Then it just all locked in. We were doing the Aquabats before GABA and before we had kids. And so that's also very campy B-movie.
Totally.
Kid shows
and B-movies and midnight movies. Yeah. It's all just an amalgamation of all that stuff.
Absolutely. Those. Yeah. The, I mean, that and then you get to GABA later. They both do this brilliant thing of bringing out a childlike enjoyment from an adult, whether or not those fans even have kids themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is maybe off the topic, but I see my kids have so much access to cartoons and media.
Yeah.
And it's great. Like, they're seeing some of the best stuff, like better stuff than we'd ever seen, like well-written, like shows that are just beautiful that I want to watch. And I think for us, you know, it was different in that there was this kind of thing where we had to seek it out. There's like only certain times and places that we could get it.
Yeah.
So then it became more of like a, oh, we have to be there to see this. And that kind of grew with us. So then, you know, as a teenager, when you're buying music, you have to like figure it out in a magazine. And then like as an adult, it just naturally became this like collector's mentality where we want to collect stuff that we haven't seen as a kid, stuff we missed, stuff from Japan, stuff in from the 60s when we weren't born, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this like, whoa, there's so much beautiful stuff out there that we had no access to.
Are you guys big gamers?
I love games. I mean, obviously, it's like the arcade is our generation.
Yeah.
We are old. We are those dudes.
You can see it.
You know what I mean?
It's in Yo Gabba Gabba.
Sure.
It's there.
It's giant. You got the like joystick.
It's quarters.
You spend all your quarters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But how many times do we spend nights at 7-Eleven?
That's what I was going
like,
to say.
Just dumping quarters.
Teenagers would be like, we got $20 each. We're going to go to 7-Eleven.
8 hours.
All night.
Yeah.
And we're going to win whatever that dumb game was.
Yeah, we're just going to get as far as we can, you know?
What was your guys' games? What was the one arcade where you're like, I own this. This is mine.
Oh, man. I was never
so
very
many.
Good. I spent a lot of money, but I never got good. But there's a lot, you know. We played
so many.
Everything from, you know, obviously the classics, the Donkey Kong and all that stuff, to like, there's that game that's formatted. It was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game that had the four controllers up next to each other.
Yeah.
And there was a bunch of games that, the Simpsons game, all those games that kind of came after
X-Men,
that.
X-Men, all that stuff.
The scrolling X-Men. Yeah. We dumped a ton of money into that particular machine, whether it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or it was X-Men or it was Simpsons. I remember that one was at the 7-Eleven. Like they would just rotate whatever the game was.
And then,
you know what the most memorable games to me are?
Mm.
Are the ones I hated because they were so hard and they took my quarters.
Defender.
Paperboy.
Williams games. Yeah, Williams.
Skateboarding 360 or whatever.
Yeah, a 720.
720.
Yeah, I sucked at that game too.
So terrible. Like, you're stealing my money. What's going
That's
on?
Right.
And those are the ones that stay with me.
Dragon's Lair. The ultimate. The ultimate, like, drop a quarter and like, boom, you're done.
Yeah. Done.
I was supposed to spend $100 on that game trying to get past levels.
That's so funny.
Because you could only jump when the thing lit up, like, and you had to jump.
Yeah.
But that game was way ahead of its time in a way.
Mm.
With the technology nowadays, you could do something more like Dragon's Lair that was even more impressive, I think, and easier to play.
Yeah.
Like, that game was so hard to play.
I remember my jam. Prizes. Mega Man or Megathon or what was that one? Where it's like girls and prizes and 100 billions of dollars and
I don't know,
you're just like killing everything in the world. It's like
you know what's sad is you're gonna have to narrow it down.
Yeah,
you're describing a lot of
game
video games
available.
You're gonna have to narrow it down, Scott.
Girls and prizes. I don't know.
Yo Gabba Gabba!
Was there any sort of fear of having that old school feel, even that sort of 8-bit video game influence in Yo Gabba Gabba or even the old school kids show feel? Was that something that you guys had to like pitch people on, this more sort of retro feel, I guess?
Absolutely. That was actually kind of hard for us to get through. We were really lucky though, because just to go back to GABA starting was because we knew it was unpitchable, obviously. I mean, you think, even you
well,
see it now,
pitched
it's like,
it a
it's
little
like,
bit.
Yeah.
And we were getting stuff like, huh?
Like what?
Like, so, you know, you have all the characters and they're illustrated and we literally, this happened in a couple of pitches and we would say, Kate, this is a live action show with these characters. And then the executives would look at it and they'll go, so it's animated?
Yeah. Or they'd be like, yeah. So this animated show you're talking about.
Live action. They're like, well, how do you do this live action? Here's a cartoon.
You pitching this in Texas?
Yeah,
are you pitching this in the old West?
We went to Alabama.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Cool. We were just channeling what's really inside an executive's mind.
They're just all oil barons?
Yeah, that's right. I don't understand this, Sonny.
I reckon it doesn't make sense.
So we just knew, like, forget it. Let's just make it ourselves. And
yeah, wow. So we did the pilot. And so doing the pilot, we were able to make what we wanted to make. And so obviously, it wasn't as calculated, I think, as it was just like, this is what we love. And our kids are going to love it too, right? They're only like 2 years old right now. And we're just going to put in like 8-bit video game things and references to our own pop culture love and all this stuff. And it was great that the like teenagers and
Because it's such an adult projection to put on the show is like, this section of the show features an 8-bit video game. Kids do not like those.
It's like, hello, dummy. You know, I was a kid once, and we have 2-year-olds. Basically, it's an animated thing it's walking across the screen.
That's it.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like, just leave it alone.
Little
just
bumper.
Leave it alone. Yeah.
Did you guys test the show on your own kids and go, 2-year-olds like it. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were in it. You know, we had them. They were our...
But I think
the demo we made was our sons when they were like 3 years old, like dancing across the screen.
But like even before that, I think just like listening to hip hop with our kids, and we're like, they respond to the like beat, or you know, listening to like some punk rock song that they're like, they would respond to. It's like, these are the things that we were like, oh my gosh, these are all the things we could put in this show. This is great. This is stuff.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the lyrics maybe not super important, but the kids respond to the beats and the simplicity of like the Ramones and the simplicity of like 80s, you know, when I hear music, it makes there's a simple dance beats that it's very rudimentary. It's very almost primal.
Mm-hmm.
Same with, you know, the Tommy Ramone's drumming is boom, 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 boom. It just sounds like a bunch of cavemen like running around, you know, and really young kids really responded to that stuff. And
we were lucky. I mean, having worked in entertainment right now, it's like we see it's like everything is so very calculated and tested and planned. And we just were like winging it, doing what we wanted to do with notebooks falling around our kids, taking down little ideas. And then we just made that into a pilot. And then the pilot, I think because of the viral frenzy that happened afterwards, it sort of like sinked the deal of like, oh, this is the show has to be.
So when we did get picked up by Nickelodeon, I mean, we were overjoyed.
Wow, what was that moment like?
Oh, man. It was just so crazy. It was a whirlwind. Honestly, like, it was a whirlwind from the weekend we got the viral frenzy of the video passed around.
Yeah.
And hundreds, thousands of emails came in. A lot of people that ended up being working on the show. A lot of like, even like people like Rob Schrab, like emailed in that first initial thing and was like, what is this?
I saw this. It's amazing. I want to be part of it.
Cool. And
most of those people ended up working on the show.
Yeah.
Well, not thousands, but you know, the people that really resonated or had production experience.
Or they're like, I want to work on your show.
Yeah.
So
cool. And that's kind of, we didn't even really plan
fell
that.
Fell into
you know?
Place. Yeah, yeah. It was magic.
There are thinkers and doers, and doers just do it. They're not looking for answers by having a meeting, cause I can get action and I'm taking the wheel. Steering the ship right into the storm, just ringing in.
This is all sort of coming from seeing what your kids are like, because you guys are starting to have families. You're going from this sort of, you know, we have this really cool band that's gained popularity, but then you're becoming family people. Is that kind of where the idea of Yo Gabba Gabba
came? Is because Scott and I, we've been working together doing music videos. We started working together professionally doing skateboard videos.
Right. Yeah.
And we'd been trying to get stuff off the ground, particularly the Aquabats TV show. We were trying to get that made, and we were writing scripts, kind of aiming a little bit towards a more adult audience, probably like a young adults. And, you know, the Aquabats were never necessarily like inappropriate for kids. But in the beginning, we weren't thinking of having kids in mind.
Mm-hmm.
We were keeping it fun in all ages. But especially with the TV show, it was kind of more, it was a little edgier and more sarcastic, a little more adult, you know, Adult Swim, if you will.
Right.
And I think having kids like we have separate families, but we had kids around the same time. So my oldest and his oldest are like maybe a year, maybe a year apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had kids that were watching TV right at the same time. We were working together. We're heading that direction anyway. And it just clicked. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, like everything that we're into, all this stuff, just that explosion happened of like, this is perfect. Let's make a show for our kids.
Yeah. I mean, us as crazy like connoisseurs of kids programming, obviously when our kids are just barely old enough to like see stuff, we're like, come on, yes, let's watch this together. I'm so excited to see Pee-wee's Playhouse together, you know? Yeah. So we were those type of dads, like sitting down with them, like watching, and then like we'd be sitting down and watching something on TV that we're like, ooh, like Doodle Bops or something. We're just like, ooh, something has to be done. Like something better. Something
must take this show out.
Like the world is so beautiful. There's so much greatness. There's so much music and animation. And why are we watching this? Why is my child watching this?
Like the Wiggles my kids weren't allowed to watch the Wiggles, and no offense to the Wiggles, but you know coming out of skateboarding and the action sports industry as well, and not to sound like a total snob, but like there's such a like what is cool is so important, especially with skateboarders.
They'll
hate to say this, but there's a lot of insecure skateboarders. They have to like prove they're cool all the time, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we were there, you know. We were there in high school. So being aware of what's cool without being a polarizing was something that we were also very keen on. Like, this can be cool without making the person that's uncool feel like a jerk.
Yeah.
We can make something that's inclusive and make everyone can have fun and be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And kids' preschool shows can be cool. Like, they can be hip. They don't have to be so square, you know?
Right.
There doesn't have to be a rainbow in every room, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's do monochromatic in this room. And the overall show is a rainbow, but you know what I'm saying?
Like,
and hey, there's notes painted on the wall. This must be a music show. It's like, oh gosh, you know, push that piano off the cliff. Like, geez, you know what I mean?
But it was also that idea of us as parents is like, hey, we want to take part in this too. Like, we want to watch this show. Like, it was never the idea of like, okay, let's put adult stuff in it that's like the kids won't get for adults. It's like, no, let's put stuff that adults are going to love about being a kid again.
That's right.
Yeah. Bringing the kid out, because that's what is so beautiful about having children is like you experience them growing up with them, and it reminds you of your experience that you didn't, you know, you just lived it. You didn't really like acknowledge it. But now you're like, oh, I love this.
Yeah.
So anything that helps kind of both of us experience that together was like, yes. And that's where GABA came from.
Exactly. So, you know, GABA is not overtly rife with like adult jokes and stuff like that.
Right.
Stuff that goes over kids' heads, or like, you know, Ethel Merman references and stuff like that, which, you know, growing up watching Warner Brothers cartoons and stuff, there's so much stuff that went over our heads.
Sure, sure.
But we were really keen on like, let's make...
Not that we didn't like that stuff or watch it or own it.
We're all into it, but with GABA, because it's so young, it's preschool, we had to...
You just want to be a kid
with that stuff in there that we all love. It's like a universal thing. And yeah, there's a few things in there that definitely go over kids' heads, but not to the point of where it takes away from the narrative.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's a tongue-in-cheek celebration. We're just like, this is the best, funnest, danciest, musicist, craziest thing.
How soon did it happen where you had fans in that sort of community of musicians and actors and, you know, quote unquote celebrities that were going, oh, I love Yo Gabba Gabba. I want to be a part of that.
The second season for sure, like so hard. But first season, we had a few, which was just, hey, check out our pilot that we made, and they got it.
The advantage of making a pilot.
Yeah.
You know, kids at home, if you have an idea, just go make it. Don't wait for someone to give you money to do it.
Absolutely.
Which is what we're still waiting for our next project, for someone to give us money.
Elijah was like, he got it. He was like, oh,
he emailed us the next day. So we met Elijah Wood at an Aquabats show.
Sure.
And Justin, our producer, had a backpack full of DVDs, and he gave Elijah Wood the DVD, and he emailed the next day. He's like, I want to be on the show. When can I start?
That's awesome.
And we were like, okay, awesome. He gets it. Just like you, there's people that totally get the show or they don't get it at all.
Right.
And that was also evident as the seasons came along and people's managers and agents were calling like, they want to do the show. because it was cool now, you know?
Yeah.
But we were really keen on like, okay, this person knows it's cool and this person thinks that they know about it. So let's pick this person that knows it's cool.
There's that skateboard culture that is right, you know, there. That skateboard like, mentality.
And we turned some people down that could have like really, sure, you know, made a difference or whatever. Like,
right.
But you know, that's why.
And I don't need to talk about it, but maybe I will a little bit.
That's the best reason what made GABA GABA and not Sesame Street is because it wasn't just like A-listers, like whoever is like top.
Who's the biggest name right now? Like, we don't care about that. Mm-hmm. We had Mark Mothersbaugh, so we had Paul Williams on the show.
It was like an eclectic, crazy
Paul Williams, you know, like, how does he resonate with anyone under the age of 35?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't, really.
And even with those people, they...
Yeah, and even there, it's like, but we think he's awesome, and the songs he wrote, they'll last forever. Like, he's amazing, and so we had him on the show, like... Indulge us, you know, absolutely. We're indulgent, but it was really fun and it worked out really good.
Different preschool has its own kind of like unique situation, different than even other kids' stuff. And that's, I think that is what allowed us to be more choosy too, is because they don't know. There is no kind of like, they don't know the celebrity, they don't know these bands. It's just presenting a wide, diverse array of like life and
totally.
Beauty.
And the spirit of it, of fun and discovery and that age, it's just like magical. I learned how to brush my teeth, Dad, you know? You're the best! It's just like they're so full of joyous moments and ups and downs and sadness. And, you know, they get their feelings hurt for the first time or it's the magic moments of that propel life, you know, is right in preschool. And so it's such a magic...
I love preschool.
Magical so age to do fun things. You
That's
know?
Awesome.
And then they turn 7 and they get cynical and they hate the world. You know?
Oh boy, I know it.
That's my son, you know, my youngest is 7. And he pretty much watched Yo Gabba twice because he has older brothers and sisters. And they're like, forget that baby show. We're watching Game of Thrones, Dad. Give me a cigar.
Okay. Let's all do it together with Biz.
Okay, here's Biz's beat of the day. Now practice this at home, and I'll see y'all next time. Bye-bye.
Maybe the most famous dancey dancer, Nathaniel. How many juice boxes did you give him that day? How many juice boxes?
Wow.
Seriously.
He came with his own moves. He was like a joyous child of dance. And we don't, that's like a lot of GABAs. Like, we're kind of setting up dominoes and letting them fall. You know what I mean? And that's the fun of it. We're not like, here, you do this exact, just like this.
Yeah. That's the best part. I mean, those little segments, I'm going to give Scott all the credit for those little segments.
Oh, just those segments?
Not just those, but, you know, but specifically, there were like segments in the shows that, you know, in creating the show, like, I had an idea for this. Like, let's do that. And Scott had an idea for this. But the dancing segments with the kids, that's one of many of Scott's ideas. But he was like, in between segments, we'll let the kids dance. We'll just let them go. And I was like, okay, sure. That sounds great. Why not? Like, because we had to find little interstitials for each little bumpers.
Yeah.
And, you know, the raddest thing about that is, I think on a different network or something, they would have been casting those kids, you know?
Yeah.
They would have been like, hey, these kids got to dance.
Yeah. We got some real professional kid dancers.
We were just getting kids, like any kids. And some kids would bring it. And we would would invite them to come in and see if they would dance in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. And if they did, they got the part. Mm-hmm. And all the kids would do it. Mm-hmm. So we would have extra kids. Just in case because sometimes kids will show up and on the day they're just like, I'm not feeling it today.
When you're that age.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Or they're in a bad mood, like, Mom, you wouldn't let me have that, you know, those Fred Flintstone vitamins this morning, so F you, Mom.
No dancing.
Yeah, so I'm not dancing for you, but some kids would just come and go nuts. And
the thing is like, I don't think we really could explain at the time everything that we were making and like the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
But honestly, like dancing, I believe that there's no more beautiful expression of being alive than dancing, because it's without words. You don't have to like think. It's just a physical expression of being alive, of not being asleep or doing something else. It's just like, go nuts, have no rules. just do it.
And then, of course, as humans, we have to make it a competition.
You know, right.
And
then, yeah,
like, yeah, exactly. You do it better than the other person.
My name is Nathaniel. I like to dance.
So you guys knew DJ Lance Rock. Was it always going to be him as the host of the show? How did that idea come about?
It wasn't. I mean, the host of the show was a host of the show. At one point, it was possibly the Bat Commander that we'd thrown
out. Yeah, but I was going to wear a different outfit. I was going to maybe do it. And we had these little pitch books, and there was a host with a robot, Plex the robot. That it was more about those two. You know, I don't even know if I still have one of those old pitch books, but the story was a little different, but... we knew we needed a host, like some kind of a human connection to the world.
Yeah.
You know, and there's definitely influence of the whole like Tweedlebugs on Sesame Street. Like that had, I think, a subconscious. Like I look back at Gabba now and I'm like, oh, I could see where all that stuff came out of. But at the time, I think it just came out of our subconscious. Like
totally.
Oh,
it was not preconceived.
We needed an Ernie to like look down into the Tweedlebugs. We needed a DJ Lance, and like not to like out our references, but that's just something we watched when we were kids, Sesame Street. And you know, the magazine format of Sesame Street had a huge influence on Yo Gabba Gabba. And that was one of those other things when we were initially pitching it, when people thought it was animated.
Yeah.
People were telling us magazine format doesn't work. Kids don't like it. And we're like, wait, isn't the internet happening and little segments and don't you think that'll work good?
Yeah.
No, magazine format, dead format.
Yeah.
And we were like, what? It seems like it's the best format ever. You know? why couldn't you just execute it a little differently?
And sure.
So we just knew we needed a host.
I mean, it's
we
also
that, didn't know who, and then that's
well. I mean, the idea of that, like us as like adults that still play with toys because we love and remember playing with toys. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that very basic way, it's basically Lance playing with his toys. You know what I mean? Like bringing out his toys and making them come to life, and in a primal way, it's like, yeah, we want someone to bring their toys to life. And I'd known Lance for years. I'd known him for like 5 years. He was in a band. We'd played together. We'd like tour together. He was a friend, but I didn't know how to kind of like pitch him to everybody. So I think it was just at Amoeba. I was like, you just got to come meet Lance. Like, just come meet him and say hi.
Okay, I remember though distinctly, there was a point where we had come up with the idea, we'd been pitching it, and it took a few years, and where we had just said, we're all in.
Mm-hmm.
Scott and I, we took loans out on our house, like seconds on our house, our mortgages, we quit our jobs. We told our wives, okay, we're going to make this show. And if it works, awesome. If not, we're going to move somewhere where it's cheap.
Yeah.
and there was a moment where we pulled our money together and we were in pre-production. Mm-hmm. And we were like, we have to find a host.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott's like, I've been thinking about this for a while. But it was because we had to. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you don't know if you can be a good parent until you have kids.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to have kids. I don't know how to be a parent. Well, then you have kids and then you have to be a parent. It was kind of like that with Gabba. It was like, we have to find a host. We have to
Has
to be the right person. And Scott was like, I know this guy. I think he would be perfect. We got to go meet him. And we're you know, okay, sure, whatever. And we went down to Amoeba. Lance is working at Amoeba Records and he comes out of the back room and literally he's wearing like zebra stripe gum pants. They were like rainbow color 70s. Pants, big lapel, like
perfect
velour shirt. Giant fro, big beard, and he was like, hello, friends, or he just said something that he says on the show.
Oh, it was bleached beard.
His beard was white, and then his afro was black.
Yeah.
And he was like, it was like lightning bolt.
Everyone was just like, oh my God.
And it was myself, Scott, and our DPJ, and it was someone else was with us. But we all looked at each other like, oh my gosh. And Scott was like, yeah.
Oh, I was like, dance like, party in Amoeba, here we go.
He was dancing out of the mud. Like,
did Lance know that you had an idea for him to be the host?
No,
like pitching it to him, this entire show and this concept?
That's a great one to ask him.
Because Lance thought Scott was just going to introduce us to some friends. We were coming there to like see if this was the guy.
You know what? Lance always says, he was like, I had no clue what I was getting myself into.
I just
said yes because I like you, Scott, and I'm just going to do this. I mean, I was out with him last night. We went to PJ Harvey, and like he's always going to be DJ Lance. Like, he's never not. Like, it's hard. Even when the show's, like, not really playing that much, everybody recognizes him. Mm-hmm. We're, anyways, that's that, another different story.
And Lance was DJ Lance Rock. That's his DJ name. Like, mm-hmm. so he was working at Amoeba. He was DJing a couple of clubs as DJ Lance Rock.
Yeah.
As the house DJ.
Yeah.
That's how I knew him, so touring in the Raymakers.
DJ Lance Rock. Like, mm-hmm. he was that guy. And it wasn't like, we got a little bit of flack at the beginning, like, oh, DJ, like, oh, you're hip hop, or, you know, you're trying to pander to an audience. We're like, no, this is the guy. This is DJ Lance
DJ
Rock.
Lance Rock. Yeah.
And people were like, okay, sure, well, you know.
Look, honestly, just to dispel that, like, absolutely, it was never, ever in the plan, like, who this host was, that he was black or Hispanic or white, mm-hmm. or he was like a DJ or was like hip hop.
Right.
Like, that was never, ever. And it was like, this is the right guy. He's going to bring himself, what he has, to this show. And he did. Like, we collaborated with him on the costume, on his personality.
Wow.
Everything top to bottom. Like, he brought that character.
Yeah! Hi, everyone. Today, we're going to do the DJ Lance dance. So everyone get up. Come on, stand up. Now today, we're gonna do the arm wiggle.
There's like 50 people here. It's a giant hangar. You know what I mean? We're like making this
and
for
Lance
real.
Lance didn't show up the first day. Like, he didn't.
He freaked out.
He didn't,
oh,
he
no.
didn't show up. He was like, I don't think I can do this.
He wasn't an actor. He wasn't like someone that we were casting. You know what I mean?
Wow.
He's a guy with like, he lives with thousands of records on every single wall,
I
everywhere.
I believe it.
And he was just like, I'm just the guy that likes music.
So the first day, he finally showed up at the end of the day. We lost the whole first day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, we said, everyone out. So it was just, we just had like a tearful heart to heart with Lance.
Wow.
And it was tough because he was coming to grips with the fact that he knew that from that moment forward, he was going to be that guy on TV.
Yeah.
And his personal life was going to be different.
Yeah.
But he decided, he's like, I just want to let you guys know I'm doing this for one reason, and that's for kids. I'm just doing it for kids.
Beautiful.
So
beautiful. And he's held to that the whole time.
Like,
you can see it.
His ethos is so punk that he won't do press.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the line, receiving line to meet him or whatever, and mm-hmm. you don't have a kid with you, he'll like just look past you like, I'm sorry, where's your kid?
Kids, yeah.
Like, he's very, very like,
he's not doing like,
he's not,
teenage media.
I'm not here for, I'm not here for you weird adults. I'm here for the kids.
And I personally have seen that happen when I go to Comic-Con. I'm walking around and I see DJ Lance Rock, and the way he's interacting with kids is this beautiful. And everything you're saying is absolutely true.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. He's a very rad guy. He's a very
awesome,
very formal, cordial
awesome guy.
But he'll open up. He opens up to kids.
Yeah.
He's got a heart of gold that's very protected.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, he's
protective
of the show.
And he only gives it to the kids. He loves Yo Gabba Gabba because of what it means to children, what it means
absolutely.
To his nieces, his nephews, his family.
That is so cool.
We like it because it reminds us of that kind of punk rock ethos. Like, mm-hmm. I'm doing this. This is my guns and I'm sticking to them.
Yeah.
And he's not doing it for, he's had offers to do other things. Nope, not interested. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, and he,
which
and
makes it
even
hard for him now that the show's not constantly in production. Mm-hmm. It's tough on him.
Yeah, I mean, that even the show pales in a comparison to the live show that he did every show, showed up three shows a day sometimes. Every day, like 6 days a week.
And there was talk from the live show production, like, mm-hmm. we need to find another Lance.
Mm-hmm.
What if we got another DJ Lance and mm-hmm. send him out there? Of course, we were appalled to even think about that.
Yeah, of course.
But we also knew that it was wearing Lance down, being there every night. He'd be sick. He'd have a like sprained ankle. Whatever it was, he would be on that stage every night.
That's
even
beautiful.
If he lost his voice a couple
and
shows.
And he did what he had to do. Like, he would work out before the live shows for like months to get ready for it. He would like change his diet, his whole diet.
He was a vegetarian. And when he went out on the road, the doctor said, you should start eating meat.
Because
you need those proteins and the energy. And he was like, okay, I'll do it. For the kids.
Oh my gosh.
He's
amazing.
He's a trooper, man. He's the Navy SEAL of kid shows.
Party in my tummy.
So yummy, so yummy.
Now there's a party in my tummy.
So yummy, so yummy.
Hey, there's a party.
What has the fan response for Yo Gabba Gabba, for Aquabats, what has that been like for you guys?
I could speak for me personally. I mean, Christian being the face of Aquabats is probably a little bit different. For me, in general, I think it's for anyone. Mm-hmm. It's something you go through and you grow. It's just something you'd never have been able to figure out how you're going to kind of like deal with it. And everyone kind of deals with it their own way. I think coming off of GABA is very hard on me. Very, very hard. Because it was like, you know, our 10-year kind of life. It was like our dream show, you know, and so I think the reaction and everything was great, but it definitely sets you up for like a bit of a like, wait, we got to get back into reality here. Like, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, the fan reaction has been incredible. And we, you know, in the beginning when the show first came out, when GABA first happened, you know, the Aquabats was always kind of an underground thing and we had our fans.
Yeah.
And people liked us or they hated us. And it was...
Who hated the Aquabats? Get at it here.
Oh, yeah, man. We had a lot of haters. Because people don't get it. Because like,
people
get
don't
it.
Get it. Exactly.
And similarly with GABA, we found out that in the beginning, the people either loved it or they hated it. And that the love grew and grew and grew and grew. Yeah. So that it was really hard to find somebody that hated Yo Gabba Gabba. Mm-hmm. You know, there's trolls out there. The trolls live under the bridge, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but it was hard to find people that hated it because it got so cool. Like it became so cool. Whereas Aquabats still kind of remained a little not cool, a little weird, which is okay. That I like it. And I'm used to it. But I think with GABA, you know, a moment that stands out in my mind is the first year we did a live tour was in Australia. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the shows in Sydney and I was standing in the very top nosebleed seats and it was packed. It was like thousands of people and kids and families. And there was this family next to me, this Polynesian family in the cheap seats, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, three little kids. And they were singing all the songs and they were hugging each other and they're, I just started crying. Like, it was crazy. Like, I couldn't help it. I just, it was so emotional because at some point, GABA took on this thing that was way bigger than anything we could even have dreamt of. And I used the term happy accident because of what it ended up becoming was this amazing bridge between generations of families that and kids that want to be pure, like simple, pure, fun. Hugs are joy, hugs are fun. High five just for the fun of it, you know? And that kind of like bigger message, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I just couldn't stop crying for like an hour. Like it was really crazy. I actually, after I stopped crying, I went and started talking to that family and I got their numbers and I invited them to come to California. And like they came and stayed at our house. Like
that's so cool.
And this is just one of thousands of families that it just touched my heart and it touched obviously Scott and that's again like we need more shows like Yo Gabba Gabba. We need things that like cross the bridge between diversity and just that connect human generations.
Absolutely.
And like it's not about ABCs, it's not about 1-2-3s, it's not about numbers, it's not about ratings. It's about teaching our kids to love each other and have fun with each other. That's what we're born to do is be happy. And you know, Aquabats is fun and wacky and silly.
Yeah, cool.
It's more of an indulgent thing for me because it's like, it was one of those things like, how are kids going to like a bunch of middle-aged fat guys in costumes? Like, can it be done? And the satisfying thing is that, you know, at our live shows now, there's way more families and kids. And
that's cool.
Kids dressed up like me and, you know, they don't know me, so there's no, like, connection necessarily. Like, it's like, why are they like me? You know, it's like, oh, it actually worked, you know, it worked. So it's cool to see that the Aquabats was entertaining for kids, even though it's quirky and it's fun of weird, obscure references and strange things. It just seems like there's all these forces for good trying to make it happen.
Yeah, wow.
And we want to do more, you know, we need to do more, and why not? So make that happen, can't
you?
Yeah.
I think I agree, guys. I think the world needs more Yo Gabba Gabba. And I think you guys really, really summed up beautifully what that whole experience was like and what Yo Gabba Gabba means to so many people. And as a fan and as a fellow human being, thank you guys. Great job.
Hey,
great job.
Talking about this.
Love
anytime.
Talking about kids entertainment. I believe the kids are our future.
It is.
Teach them well and let them lead the way.
Beautiful. Well, there you have it, little munchkins. I hope that you guys enjoyed sitting down with some of the creative minds behind Yo Gabba Gabba and the Aquabats. I was geeking out as much as I did. That was an absolute blast. Big thanks to Christian and Scott. Guys, you're not going to want to miss next week. We have got a huge surprise for the very last episode of season one, and we are going out with a bang, I'm telling you. In the meantime, be sure to visit nickanimationpodcast.com for a bunch of extra cool stuff, including a photo with me and Christian and Scott from today's record. Thanks to the awesome crew who puts this podcast together. This podcast is produced by
Jonathan Highlander,
Dana Vasquez Eberhardt, Kelly Smith,
Andrew Huebner.
Original music by Useful Creatures. All of the incredible social media for our podcast is made by
Narbe Manassians,
Sammy Armiger.
And thanks to the man who works at controls and makes me sound better than I have a right to,
Manny Grova.
Until next time, thanks for listening to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, and keep watching cartoons.